First Things First, I'm Sarah Kusak filling in for Jenna Wolf. That's Chris Canty. That's Chris Broussard. And for Chris Carter and Nick Wright, how are you guys?
Doing good.
Day two?
We're going out on a Tuesday. Let's go.
I like it.
High energy.
Are you going to sing like you were doing in the hallways, that the Tuesday song?
No, I'm not going to sing that.
You're going to dance like you were dancing?
I have a voice for singing. I'm not that vocally inclined.
Barry White. I would give you like a Barry White. No?
Barry White?
No. I wouldn't go that far.
I don't have that. I don't have that. Got to know your lane, Sarah. I always say a player that understands his limitations is a more effective player.
All right.
Just saying.
It didn't sound that bad.
I'm better at sports talk than I am about singing. We'll leave it at that.
We'll see. We'll see. Maybe hour two. All right, let's get going. As we start with the latest news on Ezekiel Elliott, tensions seem to be rising as the running back's holdout continues. Apparently, Jerry Jones's Zeke who joke didn't go over well. Yesterday, Zeke's agent told Chris Mortensen, "I didn't think it was funny, and neither did Zeke. We actually thought it was disrespectful." Canty, what's your reaction to this?
Well, when I first heard it, I didn't like it, because right now, Zeke Elliott, the thing that he wants to do is be in training camp with his teammates, and so he feels like the negotiations with his contract is keeping him away from doing something that he loves. So for what he's done for that team over the past 3 years, it feels a little disrespectful for Jerry Jones to suggest that the team would be fine being status quo with Tony Pollard and not having Ezekiel Elliott. So when you make that kind of quip, I understand what Jerry was doing, trying to keep things lighthearted and maybe trying to apply a little more pressure throughout the negotiations on Zeke. But you got to know that Zeke and his camp are not going to take too kindly to that. And so I think that's the natural reaction that you would expect from the running back and from his agent, Rocky Arsenault.
Yeah, I'm with you. Look, Zeke, no matter how confident or cocksure you may appear to be, I mean, you're in Cabo, everything's cool, I'm not worried. You have to be worried. This is a 24-year-old kid, and money is on the line. He's not sure what type of contract he's going to get. The fact that he is holding out with 2 years left on his deal shows you he's very concerned about how much money he's going to be able to make in the next few seasons and for the rest of his career. So to hear a comment like that, look, he saw what happened to DeMarco Murray. Mm-hmm. Leads the league in rushing. They, you know, didn't have nearly as much wear and tear on his body as Zeke has already, and they let him go. And Darren McFadden comes in and does pretty well, you know, 28 years old, still got over 1,000 yards. And then to see Tony Pollard playing the way he is. I'm not saying he's going to replace Zeke, but still, he looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. All of that has to concern Zeke, and I think that's why he felt disrespected. And I'm going to say this. I don't think Jerry Jones is too bothered by the fact that Zeke feels disrespected. I think, like you said, it's a little negotiating. I think he meant it legitimately as a joke, but there was an underlying jab there, because I think Jerry Jones feels disrespected. I think he feels like, first of all, you got 2 years left on your deal. Why are you holding out? Secondly, I have been there for you. I fought against the league for you. All the transgressions you've had off the field, I have supported you, and this is how you repay me. So I think there's a little disrespect on both sides, and that's why I think Jerry's probably not concerned that Zeke feels this way.
Yeah, the fact that Jerry Jones has had Zeke's back throughout all of the transgressions that he's had since he's been in the National Football League, that adds another layer onto the negotiations. But as you mentioned before, you can understand why Ezekiel Elliott feels like he needs to have urgency about getting paid. We all know that the running back position probably has the shortest shelf life in terms of top-end production at any position in the National Football League. So I understand why Zeke wants to get his money. You're talking about a guy that had 381 touches last year. So I get what he's talking about. He wants Todd Gurley money. He wants to be the top-paid running back in the National Football League. So, I mean, I don't think there's any question about what it's going to take in order to get Zeke back with the Dallas Cowboys. He's going to have to be the highest paid running back in the National Football League. I think the only question is, how big of a gap is it between what he's getting paid and the number two guy, which would be Todd Gurley?
Who holds the leverage right now?
I think that right now the Cowboys have the leverage, because this is not a Le'Veon Bell situation where Zeke can, you know, hold out the entire season or till the 10th or 11th week or whatever. He can't go free. He can't be a free agent next year. So he has some leverage because he's so good and that offense is so much built around him. But like Jerry Jones has said maybe a week or two ago, the leverage is really going to show its face in the regular season. And I've said all along, I could be wrong, but I think this will go into the first few weeks of the regular season. Mm-hmm. If the Cowboys can win those early games and Tony Pollard and company can rush well, then I think Dallas has all the leverage and Zeke has to come back, maybe for Le'Veon Bell money. If they look bad, if they lose to the Giants, or even if they win, but their running game is terrible, then I think Dallas has to go to Zeke and then make him the highest paid running back in the league.
Well, that would be Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones playing a really dangerous game, because although it's not murderer's row, the first three opponents that you start the season with, you still have two division games. And if you're trying to compete for a championship, the easiest way to get into the playoffs and give yourself an opportunity is by winning your division. So you open up with the Giants and then you got the Washington Redskins. I don't think the Dallas Cowboys can afford to stumble out of the gates, because they do have a team that won a Super Bowl a couple of years ago in their same division, the talented Philadelphia Eagles. So, I mean, you need to try to be at full force if you can help it. The reality of this situation is Ezekiel Elliott has the opportunity to open up that contract under the collective bargaining agreement. After your third season, you can address the deal. So we can all agree that Ezekiel Elliott has outperformed the contract that he's on right now in his rookie deal. So I think everybody recognizes that he deserves to be paid. He's won the rushing title two of the first 3 years he's been in the National Football League, and he's arguably the best player on that Dallas Cowboys team. I think it's just a matter of making the numbers work so Jerry and Steven can take care of some of the other guys that want their money as well.
The term disrespectful was used, but Jerry Jones seems to be speaking about Dak and Amari in a different tone than he has with Zeke. Do you think that's changed the complexion of how Zeke is approaching this, or the way he looks at it, given the way Jerry has kind of directed some of his comments amongst all of these three guys?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll address Jerry. I think the reason for that is the fact that they're in camp, they're practicing, and they don't have 2 years left on their deal. And so I think that is making Jerry feel more, you know, better about them than it is about Zeke. And again, they haven't had the off-field transgressions that Zeke has had either. So all of that is coming into play. From Zeke's standpoint, of course. I mean, he's sitting there watching this, and it seems like every other day there's some slight, right? Mm-hmm. You don't need a league-leading rusher to win a Super Bowl, even though all of Jerry's Super Bowls had a league-leading rusher in Emmitt Smith, right? We're not going to set the market. You know, Stephen Jones talking about analytics and, you know, things like that. And, I mean, and then you come out and praise Dak.
Yeah.
The way he did, and we know Dak, as much as I like Dak, is not a top-tier quarterback. Ezekiel Elliott is a top-tier running back, if not the best running back in the league, so he has to be sitting back and feeling disrespect. I think all of that plays into it. It's not just the Zeke who comment. I think it was all this stuff you mentioned as well.
No, all of those things do factor in, but the other reality that you have to look at with these negotiations is, out of the three guys that are angling for contracts right now, Amari Cooper, Dak Prescott, and Ezekiel Elliott, there's really only an argument to be made for one of those guys to be paid top of the market money. Like, Dak Prescott is not going to reset the marketplace. Russell Wilson will still be the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League after Dak's deal gets done. Same thing with Amari Cooper. He's not getting Michael Thomas money, $20 million a year. But Ezekiel Elliott, I mean, it's easy to say that when you look at these negotiations, he should eclipse what Todd Gurley is getting, that $14.375 million per year and $45 million in practical guarantees. He should eclipse all of those numbers. I think this is a much more difficult negotiation than those other two guys, just because you do have comparables where Dak should slot under, where Amari Cooper should slot under. I don't think you have that with Ezekiel Elliott.
But see, I don't think they're looking at it like that. I think, we talked about it yesterday, I think the Todd Gurley situation has hurt Zeke's position, because Dallas is looking at it like, you know, this is actually the same time they gave Gurley the contract. They didn't have to pay him early. They decided to, and now he's damaged goods, and you had a guy like C.J. Anderson get off the couch and fill in admirably for him. So I think Dallas is looking at that. I think they also consider the DeMarco Murray situation. Well, I mean, Murray had, 1,800 yards? Mm-hmm. And again, not nearly as much wear and tear as Zeke has already had, and they let him go. And so I think that I hear what you're saying, CB,
but just to push back a little bit, if Todd Gurley doesn't have the first 3 months of the season that he had last year, the Rams are probably not going to the Super Bowl. So if Jerry Jones is looking at it and saying, if I pay my running back, If that means that I have an opportunity to be in the Super Bowl, I'm sure that the Dallas Cowboys... Well, listen, I'm sure that the Dallas Cowboys would sign up for the opportunity to get there.
What are these next 4 years going to look like?
Well, it doesn't matter. You're just trying to compete for a championship the next 2 to 3 years. That's about the size of your window. So that's what they're trying to accomplish. They want to slot all of these deals in and see if they have room to take care of Byron Jones and Jalen Smith next offseason. But I think that Jerry Jones is just trying to keep this group of players together long enough to be able to compete for a championship. Windows open and close in the National Football League. I think the Dallas Cowboys are right in the middle of one. And this holdout is changing the timeline in terms of how they're going to address the other contracts, that the other players that they're going to need in order to get the job done.
All right, we'll dig into this more later in the show. But coming up, is the Antonio Brown drama officially over? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on Fox Sports Channel on Sirius XM. We'll be right back. We'll get to Antonio Brown in a second. But first, open gym basketball. James Harden, a move we've never seen before. One-footed sidestep three-pointer. He said he was working on a new move. This is it. We like it.
Best scorer ever.
Wow.
According to Daryl
Morey. I'm about to say, you were on that train with Daryl Morey.
Okay.
He's a better offensive player than Michael Jordan.
No, I do not agree.
You brought it up.
You're making fun of Daryl Morey.
Up next, look at that. Cleveland Browns practice, Odell Beckham Jr. One-handed, under the leg.
He's just special. I mean, that guy is just different. There's some guys when you walk on the practice field and you know immediately that they're just different than everybody else. Odell Beckham Jr. is one of those guys. There's nothing athletically that he can't do at a high level.
That's awesome.
That's nasty.
But what would CC say?
The gloves.
Stop it. Stop
I'm
it.
Just
don't
saying.
Be that guy.
No,
CC,
it's
don't
awesome,
be that
but
guy.
The gloves factor in a little bit. That's all I'm saying.
Monday
a
Night
bit.
Football, 49ers Broncos, Emmanuel Sanders. Great catch down the field. Didn't count, but still a nice grab.
No, Joe Flacco made it a point to get Emmanuel Sanders involved early. They also had a little reverse, which he ran and converted for a first down. He looked good last night coming off of the Achilles injury. I'm surprised that he's back this early, but he looked good.
More from Monday Night Football, 49ers Kendrick Bourne. Nice double foot tap for the touchdown.
Jimmy Garoppolo didn't throw that.
No, Jimmy Garoppolo didn't look as good as the other two quarterbacks that played for the 49ers.
He sure didn't.
Yeah, Jimmy G was seeing ghosts just a little bit.
Yeah, he was shook.
Yeah, sure. Brad Chubb had something to do with that, though.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, on to Antonio Brown. After GM Mike Mayock's ultimatum, apparently AB is all in as the wideout returns to the Raiders for a meeting on Monday, but he's not letting go of the helmet situation, reportedly filing a new grievance with the league office. CB, is most of the AB drama over, or has it only just begun?
Oh, it's over. It's all kicks and giggles from this point on.
Oh.
Yeah, it's good.
Stop.
Just get on the field and be good.
The level of sarcasm in your voice, your tone.
It's only just begun. It's not going to end, period. I mean, Antonio Brown loves attention. Witness the hot air balloon. He does it every year, right?
Yeah, he came in with the chopper last year to Pittsburgh Steelers training camp.
And that doesn't have to be a bad thing, but when you follow it up with a lot of the stuff that's gone on, it does look like a bad thing, like you want attention. I think he's only in Oakland for two reasons. One, the money, okay? He wasn't getting it in Pittsburgh. And two, for the attention, the drama. Even if they're winning games and we don't think they're going to be a playoff team, Pittsburgh was a team that had the chance to make the playoffs. And he wasn't happy. He was having a good year. Now, Juju Smith-Schuster was having a better year, but that led to some drama. You know, he wasn't happy, reportedly, that Smith-Schuster was the offensive MVP, and that's when he went AWOL from the team and so on and so forth. This is who Antonio Brown is. I hate to say it, the Facebook Live stuff. I mean, so you can't even say, if you get him on the field, he plays well, and we're winning, and he's connecting with Derek Carr, he's going to be a good soldier. No, he might just tape you in the locker room and blast it all over for the world to see. So it's going to be plenty of drama. It's going to be great for us. It's going to be fun for us. Mm-hmm. But for the Raiders, this is going to be a problem. And this is what you signed up for when you gave him the $30 million guaranteed.
Well, yeah, and shame on Mike Mayock and John Gruden if they didn't know this was the guy that they were getting. Antonio Brown is a me guy. He's not a we guy. And you saw that last year with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, the fact that he no-showed, no-called in Week 17 when the team is fighting for an opportunity to get into the playoffs, that lets you know it's all about him. It's not about the rest of the guys in the locker room. But I guess the Oakland Raiders were willing to look past that because, number one, they do need some star power after they traded away Amari Cooper and they traded away Khalil Mack. John Gruden, although he is the face of the franchise right now, you need somebody on the field that fans can latch on to that's going to sell jerseys, somebody that's an attraction. A coach on the headset ain't going to be that. But Antonio Brown is capable of being that, just looking at the numbers, what he's done the last six seasons, over 100 catches and 1,200 yards each of those years. So, I mean, Antonio Brown is from a production standpoint, as sure of a commodity that we have in the National Football League. So I think the Oakland Raiders are looking at him and saying he's going to help us sell tickets. He's going to help us transition to Las Vegas. He's also going to help us figure out whether or not we have a franchise quarterback. And I think those are critical questions that John Gruden has to answer. And that could be in part how you define whether or not the John Gruden era of the Oakland Raiders this time around is a success.
Yeah, answer that question for me, both of you. Is John Gruden's success in Oakland hinging on how things pan out with AB?
I think it is to a great degree because, one, you mentioned you got rid of Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper, guys that not only were great players, not only were young, but especially Mack, were good character guys and good locker room guys. And then you bring in a guy who is a great player, but the opposite of those guys in the locker room. So that's number one. Number two, you've got a lot of young players watching Antonio Brown, seeing what he's getting away with. And that can affect your culture if you don't handle it properly. So I think even if they get rid of AB, but they things don't, you know, other players look at his example and begin to act that way. Remember, when they traded Khalil Mack, players did come out and say, when we saw they could trade Khalil, all of us knew we were expendable. Mm-hmm. So why aren't they looking at Antonio and saying, if he can get away with that, then maybe I can do the same thing if I work hard on the field, mm-hmm. which is what Antonio does. So I think there's that. I also think with John Gruden, look, this is now he's had his last 7 years since he won that Super Bowl in 2002. His last 7 years, he's made the playoffs twice. He's won zero playoff games. And when he won the Super Bowl, taking nothing away from him, but those were Tony Dungy's guys.
Wow.
Right? Right? So yeah. When he built, yeah. when he had to put the team together kind of himself, they haven't won a playoff game since. And so far in Oakland, it doesn't look like he really knows how to put together a winning team. So, yeah, I think a lot of this for Gruden is going to hinge on AB.
Yeah, you can't take the ring off of Gruden's resume, although I do lean toward agreeing with you about those Tampa Bay Buccaneers teams. But in looking at his tenure as the head coach of the Raiders this time around, for me, if you're going to judge it based on him winning a Super Bowl, then, yeah, he's going to be a failure in his second stint with this team. But if you're talking about making sure the franchise transitions successfully to Las Vegas, that they do have a competitive product on the field once they get into that new stadium, then I think there is an opportunity for him to have success. But a lot of that is going to hinge on how he handles AB. And you saw he was walking on eggshells a little bit throughout this whole helmet fiasco, trying to support Antonio Brown, put a positive face on it, letting him know that they care about him, that they love him. AB is one of those guys that's a high-maintenance player. We saw that in Pittsburgh. You saw how Mike Tomlin tried to handle that situation. But ultimately, when you empower a player by giving him that kind of money, you're only going to see more of his personality. And unfortunately, with Antonio Brown, it hasn't been a personality that lends itself to the team doing a lot of winning.
Does it make a difference to you, though, that he did show back up at camp? I mean, what Mayock said, we heard Drew Rosenhaus say that they didn't feel like they exhausted all options. So file another grievance. That's maybe their last option. And now that he is back with the team, at least?
It's like Chris Rock said, I'm not going to give you the credit as a father just for being there. Mm-hmm. That's part. You're supposed to be there. All mm-hmm. right. Antonio Brown, you're supposed to be there. We said it yesterday. I get, we'll talk about his helmet situation and all that. I get you're upset about it. I get you're filing grievances. That's your right. But in the meantime, you still can be with your team. You can put on a helmet. You need to get used to another helmet just in case you aren't able to wear your old one anyway. So you can be there working out with the team. So I'm not going to give him credit for that. I also think there's a little bit of fear. I think Drew Rosenhaus, his agent, they saw people starting to write about the five-day letter, the mm-hmm. dreaded five-day letter, yep. where they could have him not yep. playing this entire season and not getting paid, maybe more importantly. So I think all of that lended to Antonio being there yesterday?
Well, let me say this real quickly. I'm not trying to defend Antonio Brown, but it does feel like the NFL is moving the goal line a little bit with this helmet thing, because Antonio Brown did find a shut air advantage helmet that was made within the 10-year window. And ultimately, you're saying that the NFL should approve that and certify it for use on the football field. It's not one of the helmets that they had banned in 2018. They just discontinued the use of those helmets once they're outside of that 10-year window. AB found that helmet, and the NFL said he still couldn't use it. So I do believe, in part, this is the NFL trying to draw a line in the sand and saying, you need to transition to one of the helmets that has the new technology. Just AB is resistant to that. Ultimately, if the NFL wants something, they're usually going to win, but it feels like AB is going to try to play out the string as long as possible. I don't have an issue with it as a player as long as it's preseason, but once the regular season hits, AB needs to quit it with the distractions, because this is something that could be detrimental, especially when you're talking about a young group of guys in that locker room.
All right, coming up, are the Rams going to be able to avoid a Super Bowl hangover? We'll discuss that next on First Things First.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Season football continues Thursday on Fox as Leonard Fournette and Nick Foles make their preseason debuts for Jacksonville against Kenny Stills and the Dolphins. You can catch the action starting at 8 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. It's time now for us to go viral. Greg Popovich has his hands full trying to coach Team USA to a gold medal. And if one more player drops out, Coach Pop might have to suit up himself. Take a listen to Donovan Mitchell narrate Pop showcasing his skills.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cash. Uh-oh. At guard. 6'1 from Serbia.
You guys ready to be here?
Pop was a good player back in his day, though.
You could tell. You could tell.
He knows probably still got a little bit of game, too.
Yeah.
It's like that old guy in the gym that comes in with the elbow pads and the knee pads. He's got that low post game. He's throwing elbows.
He's someone that would hustle you, smart. Make you think you can't really move anymore.
Yep.
No, good stuff, good stuff. All right, time for some stories to start your morning. Zion Williamson was drafted number one this summer and received the largest shoe deal for a rookie since LeBron James. However, some of his peers aren't buying the hype. In the NBA's annual rookie survey, only 5% of players said Zion would have the best career, tying him for fourth. His Duke teammate, Cam Reddish, received the most votes at 19%. So, CB, what do you make of this?
This was major disrespect. Now, I don't think they were throwing shade, like, we don't like Zion. Mm-hmm. They just apparently don't think a ton of his game. I mean, because not only was he behind Cam Reddish, then Ja Morant, he was behind DeAndre Hunter, who's going to Atlanta, I think the 11th pick.
Yep.
So, and then he was tied for fourth with several other players. So this is, these players are showing you, we don't think Zion's going to be that great. So we'll have to wait and see.
Usually I say game recognizes game, but it's hard for me to put a whole lot of stock into what the rookies are saying, because I saw Zion Williamson at Duke last year. And you also got to keep in mind that the rookies in 2018 voted Wendell Carter to have the most successful NBA career. I don't think any of those guys to a man would look at it now and say that he's going to be better than Luka Doncic or Trae Young.
No question.
All right, on to the NFL. Zeke reportedly felt disrespected when Jerry Jones jokingly said, Zeke who? over the weekend. According to his agent, Zeke is also reportedly still training in Cabo. So, Canty, how much longer do you think this holdout will last?
Well, I think they'll get it taken care of before we kick off the regular season, before week one when they host the New York Giants. I mean, it's still preseason, and Ezekiel Elliott is a running back. You're talking about, of all the positions on the football field, it's probably the easiest for the running back to get into the flow of things. I understand that they're transitioning to a new offensive coordinator, but they're still going to execute some of the same concepts in the passing game and the running game. So I think that this deal gets done in time for the regular season.
I think it'll go into the first or second week of the regular season. I think the Cowboys are looking at this as, hey, this is giving us a chance to see Tony Pollard and these other guys, what they can do. You mentioned the new offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore. I think they want to see with that offense and the new wrinkles in that, can we survive? Can we have a good running game and passing game without Zeke? And then if we do, he'll have to come back and take our lesser offer. So I think it goes into the season, first or second week.
All right, so some on-field action. 49ers, Broncos, Jimmy Garoppolo played last night for the first time since tearing his ACL last season. And he struggled mightily, going 1-for-6 for 0 yards and an interception. So, Canty, is this a sign of things to come for Jimmy G?
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned just because you're going through that ACL reconstruction, that rehab process. You don't know where a player is at mentally. When I looked at him in the pocket yesterday against the Denver Broncos, he just did not look comfortable. And this is coming off the report late last week that in joint practices he threw 5 consecutive interceptions. I can see why. I mean, yesterday when he threw that first pick, that was the classic chuck and duck situation. Like, he just doesn't look comfortable. And in order for this San Francisco 49ers team to take that next step, to make the jump, they're going to need a healthy and productive Jimmy Garoppolo, and right now it doesn't look like he's on the way to being that.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, the practice report, you know, you kind of blew it off. Okay, it's just practice. Then you saw last night, I mean, not only the interception, he was lucky there wasn't another pick yep. six on that, and then he threw it into the line of scrimmage twice, you know, tip ball. So he struggled. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and here's why. His first game last year, he came out, didn't play well. His next two before he got hurt, he really looked good in those last two games. I believe it was Detroit and Kansas City. So I think he'll, you know, wear off the rust and go ahead and play well. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt right now.
You got a lot of confidence.
I'm concerned. I'm not jumping off
positivity.
The Jimmy G bandwagon.
On to another quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. He was expected to play in week 2 of the preseason but sat out due to back tightness. However, the team is reportedly planning for Rodgers to play on Thursday in Canada against the Raiders. So, Canty, do you think that we need to see Rodgers there in this new Matt LaFleur offense before the season starts?
Well, I'm sure that Matt LaFleur and the coaching staff of the Packers want to see him out there, but I have full confidence in Aaron Rodgers. I know firsthand what he can do on a football field, so I'm not concerned whether or not he'll be ready in week 1 if he doesn't play in the preseason. But I do think that they want to see him in that new offense. They want to have him get into the flow of how they actually call the games, the sequence of plays. So I guess there is some value for Matt LaFleur in that regard. But in terms of needing to see Aaron Rodgers play in the preseason, I don't have to see it to have confidence that he'll be good in the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, if they were going to play him a whole half, I think there'd be some value in it somewhat. But then a lot of it depends on what the defense is showing you. Like, mm-hmm. how much of their new offense are they really going to show in a preseason game? And how much is the defense going to show you? Rodgers himself has said, I'm getting more out of our practices where our defensive team is throwing a lot of different looks at me and all of that. So I'm getting more out of that. The good news is it does seem like he's got more of an understanding and maybe a buy-in to what LaFleur wants to do. And if that's the case, I think he could have a huge season.
All right, to the Pats. Yesterday, Tom Brady's favorite target, Julian Edelman, was removed from the non-football injury list. Edelman fractured his thumb in July but is ready to go. So in the past few days, Brady has gotten back Edelman and Josh Gordon. So, Canty, do you think the Patriots have enough offense to compete for their 7th Super Bowl?
Well, yeah, they're going to have enough offense. I mean, the last 3 years, they've been in the top 10 in scoring offense in the National Football League. So I have no doubt that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick will be able to manufacture offense and score some points. Now, it looks different from year to year based on the talent that Bill Belichick has available to him on that roster. But when you have Tom Brady and you have Julian Edelman, his favorite target, that offense has the opportunity to continue to move the ball down the field, convert in critical situations, being able to get first downs, being able to get into the red zone and be efficient in that area. So this offense with Tom Brady is always going to be a prolific offense. It just looks different. But when you have Julian Edelman, the guy that's led the team in receiving two out of the last 3 years, I think they'll be in good shape.
Yeah, I like what you said about looking different because, you know, we've seen the Patriots adjust from game to game, you know, what their focus is. And now they've had all offseason to understand, we aren't going to be as strong as we've been at tight end. You know, but if they're healthy and Josh Gordon is able to stay around the entire season, which I know is a big if, then I think they will be more of a, their receivers will be a more a part of the passing game with Josh Gordon, N'Keal Harry, and then Julian Edelman, as you mentioned. And they'll obviously focus on the running game with Sony Michel, who I think is going to be a huge part of their offense, both catching passes out of the backfield and running the ball. So I think it'll look a lot different than it has in the past few years with Gronk there, but I still think it's going to be greatly effective.
When you look at Josh Gordon, how do you approach that if you're trying to figure out exactly what you're going to get out of him, the security of him being there throughout the duration of the season?
Well, I think the Patriots are doing the right thing by wrapping their arms around him. If you hear the players talking to the media in the different sound bites, everybody's talking about how much they love Josh Gordon. And when there's something that a player is dealing with in their personal life with Josh, it's the substance abuse. It feels good to have those guys in the locker room come out and support you. So I think that they're doing the right thing from that standpoint. As far as Bill Belichick is concerned, I think he understands the reality of the situation. You can't base what you're going to do offensively on Josh Gordon and potentially having him for the entire season. If he's there, great. I'm sure they'll find ways to incorporate him. But one of the things that I noticed last year when Josh Gordon was on the field for the Patriots, Tom Brady trusts him a whole lot.
Right.
I mean, Tom Brady was throwing it up to him in one-on-one coverage, 50-50 balls, and Josh Gordon typically, you know, had a great opportunity to be able to come down with it. You don't see Tom Brady trust new guys to that team that quickly. And so I think that is a positive in terms of looking at Josh Gordon coming back to the team this year. Wide receiver was a position coming into this offseason. We said the Patriots had to figure out some answers. They invested a first-round draft pick in N'Keal Harry. He's been banged up during training camp. But, I mean, if you're talking about getting a healthy Josh Gordon in the right mental headspace, then I feel good about what this offense potentially can be because he adds another element.
No question.
I mean, from a physical talent standpoint, there are very few wide receivers out there that are going to rival what Josh Gordon brings to the table. So if Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have him at their disposal, then I think you're talking about a guy that they can create some mismatches with, some favorable licks with.
Yeah, I think Brady looked at it like, man, I haven't had anything close to this since Randy Moss.
He's that kind of talent.
Right, and he went to Gordon. And I think, look, there's not a better place he could be. I don't feel like there's a better team he could be with his situation. But there's no guarantee. And as you said, Belichick knows this. And we're going to use him while we have him. And hopefully everything will work out. We'll do what we can off the field. I think Brady showing confidence in him, being friendly off the field with him. They seem to have a pretty good relationship. And also showing that confidence in him on the field, that could be motivation for Josh to stay on the straight and narrow, if you will. Now, I felt the same way last year.
Yep.
You know, things were going great. And then all of a sudden we saw what happened. So Belichick understands it. That's why, let's face it, that's why they drafted Harry.
Yeah.
They understand they need that type of playmaker at that position. So hopefully Josh will be around, though, because I think he could be great, and it certainly would help the Patriots.
Real quick, another thing that's important to note, the NFL has a new commitment to mental health, and they've got a mental health professional in all the buildings of all 32 clubs. So that's important. Maybe that'll help Josh Gordon.
That's valuable.
Hey, it's Nick Wright, and hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is, of course, ZipRecruiter.com/approach. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/approach. That's ZipRecruiter.com/APPROACH. ZipRecruiter.com/approach. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right, on to the Rams. They scored just 3 points in their Super Bowl loss to the Patriots, but the team is hoping to bounce back strongly and get back to Super Bowl 54 this season. New Rams linebacker Clay Matthews thinks the team will be fine, saying, quote, I mean, when you lose, is there still a hangover? There's just a level of talent that we should be able to put something together and do something special. I can't speak on behalf of any hangover or curse or whatever you call it, but this team looks primed and ready to make another run. So, Canty, are you buying that the Rams won't have a Super Bowl hangover?
8-Ball says doubtful. I think the Rams will have a Super Bowl hangover, and a big part of that is Todd Gurley and the question marks surrounding his health. Like, I can't ignore what I saw in December and on into the postseason. He was a shell of himself. When C.J. Anderson, a guy off the street, becomes your most reliable option in the backfield in terms of running the football, then you've got serious problems. I mean, a part of the way that Sean McVay operates his offense is he has a lot of passing concepts that are predicated off of play action. I mean, that's why Jared Goff is under center as much as he is. And when you don't have the threat of having a dynamic running back like Todd Gurley in the backfield, that hurts your team's chances of being able to get back to the big game. The other part about this that's important to note is the fact that a lot of teams in the National Football League haven't been able to do it. You're only talking about two teams that have been able to come off of a Super Bowl loss and then come back the very next season and win the Super Bowl. That's the 72 Miami Dolphins when they went undefeated, 17-0. And then, of course, the 2018 New England Patriots. Remember, they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles. They ran it back and beat the Rams. So, I mean, not a lot of teams have done it. Not a lot of teams actually even get back after they lose a Super Bowl. Only three teams have done it. The Buffalo Bills, the Denver Broncos, and the Minnesota Vikings. So, there's so much parity in the National Football League. It's so hard to repeat that level of success. I think that the Rams have a lot of things working against them in terms of being able to get back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I hear you. And I don't think a hangover would be not getting back to the Super Bowl, because I'm with you. I don't expect them to get back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I picked them to win the division over Seattle, but with some hesitation, because I do think there could be a hangover. But I think if they make the playoffs, and obviously they're not going to be satisfied with it, but if they make the playoffs, have a decent season, that to me would say there was not a hangover. Mm-hmm. A hangover to me is missing the playoffs. And that's when you have to question, okay, where's this team going in the future? Now, there are two things, despite my reservations, two individuals that I'm confident in, and obviously you got Aaron Donald on the defense anchoring that. But Daryl Henderson, the rookie running back, okay, out of Memphis. Now, we've talked about Tony Pollard and all that. Tony Pollard averaged less than 6 carries a game last year at Memphis. Why? Because of Daryl Henderson. Daryl Henderson was the bell cow with Memphis. They drafted him in the 3rd round. Obviously, they understand they got some question marks with Gurley. Can Henderson come in with Gurley playing, you know, part-time, 60% of the snaps or whatever? Can Henderson come in and be the type of back that can, you know, where you got Gurley at 75, 80%, and then Henderson can help the rest of the way, and maybe together they're the old Todd Gurley, something like that. So if we like Pollard, then I think you have to like Henderson. That's the first thing. Secondly is Sean McVay. Mm. I do think he's a great coach. He's kind of proven that already, even though he hadn't won the Super Bowl. But he was schooled by Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl, and he knows it. Mm-hmm. He's admitted it. So I think he's going to come back. I think he's been in the lab. I think he's been trying to figure everything out, you know, learning from his mistakes. So I do think McVay is going to come back and be an even better coach. So I think that at least can get them into the playoffs.
Bill Belichick is one thing, but do you think the entire league will make adjustments to Sean McVay, what they've seen, and just his approach to the game and ways in which they can start to combat that and try and figure that out throughout the course of the entire season?
I think we saw the league start to make adjustments toward the end of last year. You're talking about the second half of the season and then on into the playoffs, because that Rams offense wasn't nearly as explosive. Now, I mean, you can pinpoint a lot of that on Todd Gurley and his health situation, but I think also the league has a better understanding of what Sean McVay is trying to do, some of the concepts that they're trying to execute and some of the things that they're trying to take advantage of with opposing defenses. Coming into this year, I think it's important that Sean McVay help Jared Goff get on track in terms of being able to take that next step to become a top half of the league quarterback. I think the jury's still out on what Jared Goff is going to potentially be. That's why the Rams and Les Snead aren't in a hurry to pay him. Remember, Carson Wentz is in the same draft class as Jared Goff, and he just got his money from Howie Roseman and the Philadelphia Eagles. I think that the Rams are taking a wait-and-see approach with Jared Goff just because I think they want to find out whether or not he's a guy that's capable of elevating the play of everybody around him. Now, I think that Sean McVay can help him and add a little more variety to that offense. They spend a lot of their time in 11 personnel. That's one running back, one tight end, and three wide receivers. I think they need to change it up, give the defense more variation in terms of personnel groupings and formations. That'll hold those guys a little bit off balance and make things a little bit easier for Jared Goff. They've got to try to figure out a way to give Jared Goff more answers in real time. Another one of those things that we saw late in the season, defenses disguising their looks. Jared Goff and Sean McVay use that coach-to-quarterback headset communication when he's at the line of scrimmage, and Sean McVay's telling him what he sees and trying to tell Jared Goff where to go with the football based on the looks. I think that Sean McVay has got to do a better job of coaching Jared Goff off so he has those answers without that, because defenses are going to adjust, defenses are going to disguise, and after he snaps that ball, he needs to understand what he's looking at in order to get the football in the hands of the right playmakers.
Hopefully Cooper Kupp being back may help.
That should help too.
Yeah, nice receiver.
All right, coming up, have we seen the end of Zeke in Dallas after he felt disrespected by Jerry Jones? That's ahead on First Things First. We are back here on First Things First with New York Daily News NFL reporter Pat Leonard. Pat, we're thrilled you're here with us. We're glad we're getting all the dirt on Canty as a player.
Yeah, thanks for
all
having me.
All the good stories.
Yeah, covered him back in 2012.
Yeah, Pat's my guy, man, the go-to for New York sports media. If you want to have the inside scoop, go to Pat Leonard.
I appreciate that.
My man.
I like it.
Is that why? Because you're on this show now, you got to come on my radio show later, right?
I'll bring it there,
you know,
that's
a part of it, okay?
I'll bring it, yeah. That's part
of the
deal?
We're going to deal with all this after the show. First, we are going to talk some Giants. Rookie quarterback Daniel Jones has looked good in the preseason. However, the team is hopeful that he can sit back and learn behind Eli Manning this season. Owner John Mara said that it was his hope that Eli Manning starts the whole season. And when Giants head coach Pat Shurmur was asked about it Friday, he echoed the same sentiment.
John owns the team, right? And we're on the same page. You know, there's really not much more to say. And I think I've been saying that all along. I just get a sense once in a while that when I answer those questions, nobody believes me. Well, you heard it from the owner.
All right, Pat, now you're around this team all of the time. So when do you think that Daniel Jones will eventually take over for Eli?
Sarah, I think the Giants open at Dallas, right? They open against the Cowboys. Yep. Everyone at AT&T Stadium should get their cameras out and take their pictures, because that is the last time Eli Manning will start against the Dallas Cowboys. They play them in week 9. They play, good morning, everybody. Good morning. They play Dallas in week 9, and by that time, Daniel Jones will be in. Pat Shurmur and John Mara are on the same page in this sense. They both want to start Eli Manning in week 1, and they both want to win this season. But Shurmur is more realistic, I think, about what the Giants are this year than the owner, John Mara, is. And I firmly believe that Pat Shurmur is going to go to John Mara earlier than the owner would prefer or envisions with this decision. Because the fact is this, Pat Shurmur's on his second head coaching job. Did you know this? He needs to win 8 of his first 12 games to match Ben McAdoo's win total the day he got fired. And that was in the middle of his second season. Pat Shurmur can't be patient here. Not to mention he, Dave Gettleman, and Mike Shula, okay, the offensive coordinator, I call him Margaritaville. He's so laid back. He lights up like a firecracker when you talk about Daniel Jones. And back in May, Mike Shula told all of us, not just me, told all of us that if this were a different situation, Daniel Jones would be ready to start in week 1. Now, that's in May. We now have had training camp going on for several weeks. We have now all seen this kid throw a good deep ball. Mm-hmm. I'll be the first one to admit I didn't like the pick at number 6, but I also want the kid to succeed. He deserves every right. And frankly, you've missed the playoffs 6 of the last 7 years, and Pat Shurmur can't afford to lose this coaching job going out, being the good employee, just playing Eli Manning just because they want his career to end the right way. We want it to end the right way, but the priority, and John Mara will tell you this too, and you know this, Chris, is to win games. And if it's clear early that they're losing because of their offense and because of Eli, they're going to go to Daniel Jones quickly. And for predictions, if you're putting money down in Vegas right now, week three at Tampa Bay. That's what I'm telling you.
Right, yeah, now. I like where you're headed, because I want to see Daniel Jones, as great as Eli's career has been and all that. But looking at their schedule, you got Dallas, which you would think would be a loss, okay? But then you got Buffalo, Tampa Bay, Washington, and Minnesota. At least three of the first four, I mean, you think you can play with Buffalo, Tampa Bay, and Washington. So if, like you said, if they're losing those games because Eli can't move the football, I think it's in that window or right after that that you go to Daniel Jones. The season looks like we're not going to be a playoff team. We're not going to be that great. Let's make it all about developing this next quarterback we have. And that's when I think he'll move in there.
Well, here's what I'll say. I think the Giants have a midseason game up in Foxborough against the New England Patriots, and then they come back home against the Arizona Cardinals. So you're talking about a Thursday night game up in Foxborough and then 10 days to prepare before your next home game against subpar competition, because we don't think the Cardinals will be very good this season. I think that's a soft place to land. Another natural point in the schedule for Daniel Jones to take over is after the bye week, week 12, up in Chicago. I think that makes a sense. He would have about a third of the season, six games to play. I think that's a good enough sample size for him to get the requisite experience that you would want your starter to have going into year two. But in terms of what you mentioned about Pat Shurmur, I mean, Pat Shurmur is on the hot seat this season. I mean, Vegas released the odds for coaches to be fired this upcoming season. At the top of that list was Jay Gruden. Number two was Pat Shurmur. So, I mean, you have to understand, ownership is embarrassed about what's happened the last couple of years, having an 8-24 record. And like it or not, Pat Shurmur is a part of that. So you're talking about a coach that wants to win as many football games as possible. The one thing that you have to be concerned with a little bit is how the organization is going to handle the Eli Manning farewell tour. Because I think that there are some people in that organization that want to give Eli Manning every opportunity to go out the right way, to go out as the starting quarterback, and to have only played for the New York Giants. But I think that when you're looking at this team, realistically, it's going to be hard for the Giants to be very competitive. It's not a very talented roster, especially on the defensive side of the ball. A lot of new faces. So I don't necessarily see the Giants competing for a playoff spot. If you're not competing for a playoff spot, if you're losing games, you might as well lose while having the benefit of your young quarterback getting the on-the-job training. That's why I think there's a little bit of conflict in the organization in terms of when would be the right time for Daniel Jones to take over.
You make a good point, too, about week six at New England. The NFL, this is their 100th season, landmark season. They have games earmarked to celebrate that. I think everyone in the NFL, or I could tell you everyone in the NFL, plus the Giants, wants Eli to get to that game. One last head-to-head with Tom Brady, the guy who can't beat him in the Super Bowl, but basically beats everybody else. So I think the league wants Eli to get there. But also, week seven, if that's Daniel Jones, if he gets to week six and that's Daniel Jones, Daniel Jones versus Kyler Murray. And then a few weeks later, Daniel Jones versus Sam Darnold. That's great TV. That puts fans in the seats. It's not only about winning. It's about putting fans in the seats. But this is the thing, going back to Shurmur, in 2004, when they went to Kurt Warner, they were 5-4. And what worried me about what John Mara said recently was that if they're 5-4, you can tell by what the owner's saying, they're not going to do it. And I think that's absurd, but that's what, going back to my point, I think Pat Shurmur will. And I don't think they're going to be 5-4 after nine games.
Well, Pat Shurmur won't have a choice if John Mara doesn't want to turn it over to Daniel Jones.
That's true.
I don't think this was a coaching decision. This is going to be an ownership decision. And it's a different attachment that the organization has to Eli Manning as opposed to Kurt Warner. Because Kurt Warner didn't win any Super Bowl trophies for the New York Giants. Eli Manning has won two. So I think that there's a different dynamic when it comes to how they're going to go about replacing Eli Manning or having the successor for Eli Manning step in and take the starting quarterback job.
Yeah, I think, look, if they're, your scenario, if they're 5-4, that means Manning has to be playing well. You mentioned how young the defense is. The receiving core is going to be depleted early in the season. Manning will have been playing great football if they're 5-4, and I think they would stick with him at that point. I think whenever it's evident that they're not making the playoffs, and again, I mentioned the first, you know, four games, if they lose all four of those and Manning can't move the football, at that point you understand at some point we got to get Jones in. But as long as they're in the playoff hunt and look like they have a chance, I think they'll stay with Manning.
For John Mara, do you think there's any residue from the McAdoo starting Geno Smith situation from a couple of years ago that he's still thinking about and looking at?
No question, Sarah. I'm so glad you brought that up, too, because that is the full context of this. And Chris alluded to it. That wasn't just Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese, even though they were fired for it. John Maron, I talked to him about this the year after. He has taken full blame in hindsight for signing off on that, signing off on the plan. At first, it sounded like McAdoo went a little rogue. And he did present it to Eli Manning a little differently than they talked about it, which is why Eli was more offended than he should have been. Mm. But John Mara signed off on it, so he orchestrated it. He was the one behind the plan that went so wrong, so he wants to personally get it so right. John resents, and he's told us this directly, he's told me this directly, he resents the suggestion that his emotion is getting in the way here because he doesn't want people to think he doesn't want to win. It's not about Eli over winning, but no one's saying that. Everybody knows John Mara wants the Giants to win. They've won two Super Bowls fairly recently, as you're aware.
Mm-hmm.
And John Mara believes, though, that they can still win again with Eli Manning, but there aren't many people who believe that anymore, and he needs to let go.
That sounds like emotion to me. Well, you know, the fact that he thinks Eli can get it done.
Yeah, I think it's perpetual mediocrity if you're trying to do two things at one time. I mean, if you're trying to make a playoff push with Eli Manning as your quarterback, then you make all the decisions in that offseason to try to support that. If that was the main objective, then you're not using the number six overall pick on a quarterback. But the fact that they decided that they were going to Daniel Jones, to me, signals that the organization is trying to rebuild. If you're going to rebuild, then, of course, Daniel Jones is going to be your future. You make all the decisions this upcoming season to support that, and that means that you're trying to get this kid as much experience as you possibly can in meaningful games.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.